In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed onto the sun.
And welcome to the Deep Dive episode. The deepest of dives. Really is. The deep dive episode of We're Drunk and We Know Things.
You might say the deep dive.
You might do.
I mean, you wouldn't, but I just did.
I mean, I'd ring a bell. I'd be like, dive, ching. And then I'd be like, put some more coal on the fire, etc. Anyway.
I think you might be doing it wrong if you're putting coal on the fire, but anyway.
Anyway, so it's the deep dive episode, and you might remember that 2 weeks ago we did Hunt for the Red October. And so the obvious deep dive for this month, he
puppies.
Said, struggling to think of a joke, puppies will do fine. The obvious deep dive this month, of course, is submarines.
Ponytails. Yes.
Submarines. We're in the Prince of Wales still. It's getting dark, but fuck it. It's Wednesday.
They got lights.
So let's do submarines.
Yellow submarine. That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
Since the dawn of time,
okay,
man hath sought to go under things.
Okay.
Under sure. The covers. Undercover.
Yeah. Yes.
Underwear.
Underwear. Yes.
And most presciently for this episode, under the sea.
No, not underwater.
No, you're under the sea.
To quote a fake Caribbean lobster.
Crab.
Under the sea. He had those big claws.
Crab claws. They're a thing.
Yeah, it's true.
Right, so.
That also, by the way, is white face, by the way.
Ooh.
It's a white guy being a Caribbean. Anyway, move on. I'm joking. I'm really not that precious. Let's move on.
Because you know that she's now black in the movie, so that's the whole thing.
I know.
Hi. So, we have to ask ourselves, what is a submarine?
It's a tube with people in it under the water.
Fair. Technically, so is a train that's gone off a cliff.
Yes.
That, kids, is why I no longer get the train from Exeter to Dawlish.
It's true.
If you've never done that, by the way, that's hilarious. It literally runs along the seaside.
Okay.
They close it regularly because of high tide.
Oh, really?
Which is not a thing that's ever happened before.
Oh, wow.
Global warming, innit? So, what is a submarine? I'm just going to tell you because you're not going to answer me.
It's a tube of people in underwater.
No, a submarine is a boat that can operate independently underwater.
But it is a boat.
Of course it's a boat. What else would it be?
No, I just wanted to be clear.
No, they are actually always boats.
Right.
Regardless of how big they get.
Very ready planes.
They are not ships.
You're okay.
And no, they are not planes unless something has gone very wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. But you also have boats on the top.
Okay, let's not get into it. Let's just
move on.
There was
a certain point in boating terminology, it's not really naval, where you go from a boat to a ship. However, submarines, always boats. Doesn't matter how fucking big they are. Okay. And some of them get really big.
U-boats, etc.
Indeed. They are boats in German and Russian.
Right.
English, the Americans, it's always boats.
Oh, okay.
For no reason at all. Other than Navy.
Like naval tradition business.
The reason I'm saying what's a submarine is because we also have things like submersibles, which technically kind of are submarines, but could also be tethered to a controlling ship. So they're not independent.
Okay. Yeah, but you and your old schooly, old diving bell, got the big brass helmet on. That doesn't make it a submarine. You're in a submersible
suit. And there's also a subset of the diving bell, which is the diving something else, which basically is tethered to a raft.
Right.
Not submarine. Submarine, strictly a boat that can move freely underwater under its own power.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the history of submarines.
All right.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
It's weirdly kind of interesting.
Well, I hope so, because we've put a whole fucking episode around it.
The history of submarines is weirdly kind of interesting. So, according to reports...
Did Leonardo da Vinci invent one?
No, helicopter. He was more of it going up. He didn't like going down.
Which is not anything that I've heard about.
It's not what the Mona Lisa said. Hello. Although, at that time, she was just Mona Lisa.
That's true. Well, she was just Lisa. He didn't make a moaner yet. No, okay, no, okay, let's move on.
According to reports, in 1562, two Greeks submerged and surfaced in the river near Targus, near the city of Toledo, without getting wet.
Okay, right. So this whole episode is me biting my tongue because everything is a euphemism then, is it?
Totally.
Right. So two ancient Greeks didn't get wet.
More importantly,
but they were...
They carried with them...
A balls deep.
several times in front of witnesses, they carried with them a flame that remained alight even after they had submerged and surfaced.
Okay, right.
That's 1562.
Okay. 1562. According to reports.
So.
According to the New York Times. You can't trust
pretty
them.
Pretty sure it was actually in the Sun.
Really?
It was opposite a thing about how somebody's got bigger boobs now.
That's why they've never heard of submarines in Liverpool.
mirror readers all, right?
Hey-o! Anyway, go ahead.
Right, so the first submersible submarine that can be confirmed, as in was actually built, was designed and built in 1620 by a chap called Cornelius Drebbel.
Right.
He's a Dutchman,
sure.
Cornelius.
Yeah.
And it's probably Drebbel. I don't fucking
it's Drebbel.
Know.
It's Drebbel.
I don't speak Dutch.
It's Drebbel.
And his submarine was propelled by the means of oars.
Right. You've got to have some tight flanges around them orbs, eh?
Very, very tight flanges. I'm guessing made of leather.
I would assume so.
And
at that
maybe
time?
Some form of grease to kind of...
Yeah.
But anyway, sure. So yeah, you know, he's just rowing around and then... Down he goes.
Sure, yeah, of course. Running around and then down he goes. Sure.
I'm assuming backwards.
Oh,
because that's how you row.
I really hope you've got 10 minutes of material because there's going to be a lot of riffing
1747.
In this one. 1747.
We're getting closer.
Yeah.
But we're still way back there. A chap called Nathaniel Simmons patented and built the first known working example of a submarine that uses a ballast tank.
Sure, okay. So the ballast tank is they fill tanks with water to make them heavier to sink them.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. We'll talk more about how ballast works.
But
in
modern submarines have that too.
Indeed. Yeah. So 1747, they got ballast sorted. Mm. The first military submarine was built in 1775.
Well, that is unless you prescribe to the film Sahara's theory, whereas the submarine travels from, the south of America. Southern America, not South America, South America, to Africa, holding a booty of doubloons for Steve Zahn and Matthew McConaughey to seriously just watch Sahara.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't before 1775.
That wasn't, well, no, that's the American Civil War, so it'd be much after
we'll
that,
come
it?
On to that.
Ooh.
So, the first submarine, first military submarine, the Turtle.
Sure, good
might
name.
Be the Tuttle. I'm not sure if autocorrect has
if it's not the Turtle, I'd be annoyed, because that
fuck
is
it.
Fair. Okay.
It's the Turtle now. It was the first to use screws or propellers for propulsion.
Okay, yeah.
Apparently there's screws when you're in the water. I'm guessing because sailors like to
screw.
Well,
it's the same thing. yeah, sure, it's because of that. Well, I love fucking, so I might as well name them after fucking. That's what it is. Well, they propel us, but don't this remind you of fucking? Well, let's call them screws, then.
Why? Because it spins round and round.
Yeah, exactly.
And it makes me go forward. Hang on, what?
Like the human penis. It's it's got a bevel on it, and it spins round and round. Is that just me?
See a doctor, please. the best thing is it used propellers for propulsion, screws for propulsion, but it was still hand-powered, so there's somebody there literally...
Had to turn the screw.
Cranking away.
Cranking away, turning that screw.
Screwing like crazy. How was your day today, darling? Well, it was good, thank you. We managed to get the submarine underwater, but I'm tired from all that screwing.
The funny thing is, darling, I've just got a fantastic new job. What is it? I cranked the screw. Sorry, what do you do? No, I go underwater and I crank the screw. And where? I'm in a pressurized environment with lots of other men and I crank the screw. Haven't you heard? It's a top job.
So that was 1775. She divorced him in 1775.5.
Yeah.
In 1864, and this is actually late in the American Civil War, because the American Civil War did have submarines.
It did, indeed, yeah, indeed, it did.
Specifically, we're talking about the Confederate Navy submarine, the H.L. Hunley, and it became the first military sub to ever sink an enemy vessel. And it sank the Union sloop of war, the USS Housatonic?
Sure, the Housatonic.
Again, I'm not sure the autocorrect has
gone to... Sorry, the Housatonic?
Housatonic?
The wiser tonic.
A tonic says what? Is it? Now, unfortunately, the Hunley also sank because it was too close to its own torpedo.
Oh, wow. Really? So the... Yeah.
Hang on, bear with me. We're not talking about torpedoes as we know them, which are independently steerable or tracking missiles.
Sure,
no,
sure.
We are talking about something that was referred to as a spar torpedo that was basically a long stick that they had kind of, they could push out the front of the submarine, and on the end of the stick there was a bomb.
Wow. But it had to keep burning underwater.
Oh, no, that's fine. The fuse and all that, have you?
Yeah, the magnesium fuse or something.
That was all good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did mean that it was literally limited in its range to how far
out
you could get.
How long your stick was and how long your arms were.
Which presumably was also limited to how big your submarine was.
I mean, you will indeed, yeah.
Well, unless it was like one of those like modern things that they use to clean chimneys.
I love
that.
It's got all the way
through.
Someone's designed it. Someone's tested it. It's got all the way through testing. And they're like, nah, this will be fine.
What's the worst that can happen?
I mean, sure, we'll lose a whole
crew. Unfortunately, the Hunley is the worst that can happen. So, first confirmed submarine military action. Successful. You know, they sank the boat, but also...
Yeah.
They killed
themselves.
Us, you fool. Yeah. You arrogant fool.
Exactly, you arrogant fool. It's a real topple-off situation, yeah.
Yeah. We also then have, in 1866, a British engineer called Robert Whitehead developed something called the Whitehead torpedo, which was actually the first thing that we would recognise as a torpedo.
So that was a timer on a bomb with an encasing.
It was kind of on a string.
But yeah, you're right. It sounds exactly like a torpedo that we know about.
You could steer it, and it could go a long way out there.
Okay, right.
As long as you didn't have to be like within poking
distance.
Does that
answer the question of how long is a piece of string?
I just love the idea that it's like, so what do you do? Well, darling, I've got a fantastic new job. They give me this stick, and I just have to run it out.
No. Your job is the... I'm the string measurer for the torpedoes, don't you know?
Jesus. Funnily enough, there was no widespread or routine use of submarines by navies. And unfortunately, this is going to be
quite
a military podcast.
It's weird because it was clearly so effective.
There was no widespread use until about the 1990s.
Ooh. 1990s? 1890s.
The
1900s.
I was somewhat distracted by you pouring cider down my leg.
Until Nemo. I thought it went in my mouth. That's what she said.
Well, I got wet.
That's what she said.
Anyway, back to it. We're not taking a break. We're professionals.
No, he's keep going. Keep hurrying on. It's fine. This is for all our listeners who have complained recently that we haven't been drunk enough during our podcast.
Yeah, you asked for it, yeah.
You fucking asked for it, you dickheads, yeah.
In the 1880s, we actually invented like electricity and batteries and shit.
Yeah, sure.
Late 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't take
all
the... Is
that the 1700s? I can never do this.
Edison's 1800s, right? And like Edison and Tesla and stuff is 1800s.
No, it is. It's the 1800s, but it's the 17th century?
It's the 1800s, but it's the 19th century.
Either way, that. We invent batteries and what have you, and funnily enough, people start looking at batteries and looking at submarines and going, this solves a big-ass problem.
Sure, yeah.
No more cranking the screw.
No more steam pressure, no more cranking that screw.
There were steam-powered submarines.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah.
The trouble is, put more coal on the fire. It's like, you're in a thing that contains limited oxygen. Maybe don't have anything
burning.
Let's make
a pressurized container inside of a pressurized container. What you're doing is putting a load of people inside a bomb, a pipe bomb.
And then putting it on a stick.
And then fire torpedoes off the end of a stick.
Poking torpedoes.
Poking torpedoes off the end of a stick.
So we've got the electric battery tech, which came in. We've then got a whole ton of really weird innovations that just kind of arrived at about the same time.
Right.
So we've got the invention of the internal combustion engine, the diesel engine, which led rise to diesel-electric propulsion.
Yeah, yeah.
A boat that can go quick on the top, slow underneath, but doesn't need to burn anything.
Yeah, yeah.
We have
Where
things
like... Where do the
emissions
go? Do they just pump them out into the water?
What emissions?
When they're doing diesel.
They can't run diesel underwater.
Oh, they're using electric underwater and diesel on top.
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I'm with you.
See above about not having things that are on fire on a submarine that's under
course,
the... Yeah.
Other than all the cigarettes that they were smoking.
It's fine, though.
It's fine. There's loads of gunpowder. It's fine. That's my favourite thing about ships in those days. Oh, no, I deal with the munitions. So you just live your life around munitions. Yeah, yeah, and gunpowder. Yeah, yeah, of course. Obviously, I'm allowed... I get a ration for cigarettes. Brilliant. Fantastic. Oh, rum and cigarettes. Fantastic. Famously...
Drunk and flammable. Those are the two things I really want from a sailor who's looking at a
early 1900 rum, famously refined and not flammable at all, yes.
Well, famously flammable enough that if you spilt it on the gunpowder, it would still actually explode. Right, so we also have the invention of the periscope. I mean, not the invention of the periscope, the concept had been around for a while, but putting one on a boat was new.
Yep.
More importantly, the invention of a double hull. Now, this is quite cool, and we'll talk about double hulls in some detail in a bit.
Okay.
And all of this kind of happened, like, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They invented most of submarine technology.
There was a 20-year flurry.
120 years ago.
So presumably was that other technology had a big flurry, and then they applied it to submarines?
I think, to be honest, it's mostly, once you've got propulsion sorted on a sub, you suddenly run into a whole world of other problems.
Sure.
And you solve them fairly quickly or you
die.
Right, so we then have the Irish inventor, a chap called John Philip Holland, who built a model submarine in 1876.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, upgraded it to a full-size submarine. Now, the thing about John Philip Holland was that his submarine wasn't particularly special. It was a diesel-electric powered sub.
Yeah.
But it was commissioned... Well, his prototype that was built in 1878 was actually... not even commissioned, it was just, like, nicked by the US Navy.
Sounds like them.
And they made it, like, a US ship. It was the USS Holland, in fact. I'm not sure why I'm digging around for that.
Yeah, so they stole it off him, but they named it after him.
Well, I'm guessing they paid him.
Sure.
The Brits also commissioned a whole bunch of Holland submarines that were built under licence.
Oh, really? Okay,
now, the best thing about this story is... they were built under license. They were built by British engineers,
right?
In British shipyards.
Yeah.
So all the guys who were building were looking at, well, that's shit. I can do better than that. Yeah. So the British Holland submarines,
British engineering.
Holland class submarines, were actually firstly incredibly late, but also much much better than the originals.
No, I bet. It's the same with tanks. We famously were awesome at tanks in the First World War. They didn't break down anywhere and just essentially become cover for running soldiers.
We were fairly good at tanks in the Second World War.
There's got to be a lot of, like, I'm not patriotic about...
Not as good
about,
as the Germans.
I'm not patriotic about a lot of things.
The Germans are going to come up again.
I'm not patriotic about a lot of things, but I am proud of British engineers quite a lot. That pops up a lot in history and even in, like, my wheelhouse of films and things like that, of, like, things they take it to multi-million places in America and they go, no, we can't do that, and they take it to English people and it's five blokes smoking a fag in a boiler suit and they go, yeah, I can probably sort that out.
Well, there's always a Welsh guy.
The Batman Begins car, the big, you know, the tumbler, an English engineer built the specs and they took it to the Hollywood engineer of, like, whatever the fuck they use for WB or whatever, and they said, no, there's no way you could do that. So they took it to a bunch of English engineers and they went, yeah, all right, 2 weeks, all right.
Except the Welsh guy in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
The wheels aren't big enough.
Yeah, exactly. You don't do better than that.
So, unfortunately, submarine history is now interrupted by a rather inconvenient world war.
Sure.
We got the first one.
Which you would think actually would be better, but it was a land war, so not a lot of lead for submarines at that point.
You say that. The Germans had basically a fleet of diesel-engined U-19 class subs.
Oh.
These things
were
capable.
So is that the birth of the U-boat?
Yeah.
Okay. Which is seen in Das Boot.
Which literally stands for...
underwater.
Undersea and boat, or underwater.
Underwater boat, yeah.
It's obviously, Das Boot is World War II.
But they're using a super old submarine, aren't they? Which is part of Das Boot.
We'll come on to that as well. Bear in mind that in World War I, the U-19 class had a range of 5,000 miles.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, which meant that they could get from Germany and just poodle around the British coast.
But also that depends on how much food they could keep on board and everything else.
Oh, yeah,
of course.
I don't think fuel was a limiting factor at this
point. Yeah, yeah, no, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
It also had a top speed of 8 knots, which is not quick.
Oh, wow, that is not quick. So 5,000 miles, but they could only go 1,000 because... Well, they could only go 50 because 8 knots is not very fast.
Well, no, they could do 5,000 miles. It took them a while.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
The Royal Navy, meanwhile... had a total of 74 submarines in the fleet.
Right.
And bear in mind, the Germans, I think, had something like 18 submarines.
It was the First World War.
18 U-19 in the First World War. The Brits had 74, but they were all, see above, like Holland-class bullshit from before the turn of the century.
74, but some old knackered piece of shit.
Yeah, real mixed bag. Yeah, yeah. As a result, during World War One, more than 5,000 Allied ships were sunk by German U-boats.
Because they were just better.
much.
5,000
ships? 5,000
ships. You never think about the First World War being a naval battle. It's all about entrenchment and, like, you know, Belgium and Ypres and all that kind of stuff. Yep. You think about, like, trenches, but you don't think about... I studied it for a long time at school, but you know they never talk about the sea war of the First World War.
The argument is that actually the German submarine action was so successful, it was part of the reason that the Americans entered the First World War.
Oh, wow. Entered the First World War?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
We all know why they entered the second one.
To win it at the last minute. And to be like, we won it! Sorry, American listeners.
Nothing to do with the Japanese at all. After the First World War...
Well, they had a bomb they needed to try out.
They did. And how did they deliver that bomb? No.
Are we going to talk about the Indianapolis?
We are not talking about the Indianapolis.
Like eyes, we're not talking like about a doll's eyes.
And there it is. Between the First World War and the Second World War, there wasn't actually much time to do much innovation in the space of submarining.
Because they'd run out of men, so they were just trying to rebuild the population.
Germany, of course, in the Second World War, very famously, has been covered by all of the films.
Lost.
And lost.
Famously.
Oh, sorry.
Covered by films.
All of
lost.
The films and the TV series Lost. Eighth season.
No, I mean they lost that war.
They did. They didn't lose it for want of trying in the Atlantic. And they basically took World War I U-boats and upgraded them a bit. But not much. Apparently a U-boat is barely a submarine. It's pretty much...
They can go down for a bit, and then they have to surface to like refresh air and stuff like that.
They can basically dive, so that you can't quite see them. So they kind of see a thing over there, and then they dive.
So that's
that
a big thing in
you.
Dust Boot, isn't it? About how they're going to run out of air if they don't surface soon.
Yeah. So the U-boats were upgraded. The major innovation, the thing that absolutely kicked our ass for the first part of the battle in the Atlantic, was communication and Enigma.
Sure, yeah, okay.
That they could tell each other exactly where they were going to be, they could tell each other where the fleets were going to be, and we had no idea.
Right. But then Turing and all those Polish engineers stepped in and cracked the problem.
Suffice to say, the submarine war, the Atlantic battle, did not end well for the Germans.
Yeah.
To be fair, neither did World War II.
But didn't the Japanese have an enormous...
Oh, well, like, come on to
thing?
The Japanese.
Okay, sorry.
By the end of the war, and this is, right, World War II, which is probably the most covered... The Battle in the Atlantic is the most media popularized element.
100%. Yeah.
So, how many ships did the Germans sink in World War I?
5,000.
By the end of the war, 3,000 Allied ships had been sunk by German U-boats, of which 175 warships, 2,825 merchantmen.
Yeah. So, you know, innocents. You know
2,000. Well.
Merchant navies, supply ships.
They're
supply
definitely
ships.
Not military.
Supply ships for
about 2,000 less than they took care of in World War
I. So we'd already, the Allies had worked out a way to tweak sonar and that kind of stuff to see what
partially,
they were.
Partially, and to be honest, it was the improvement in aeroplane tracking, it was the improvement in drop torpedoes. It was the fact that we actually had things like
sonar.
Destroyers that were designed to kill submarines.
Yeah, of course,
You know, we didn't really invent the
depth. Well, that's why bombers were initially brought in to take out ships, not to take out towns. Mm-hmm. Bombers, you know, the Lancaster and that kind of stuff, were brought in to take out ships, not, you know...
Just to be honest, if you drop a big enough bomb anywhere near a ship, it's done.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, the Imperial Japanese Navy...
That's what I'm going to say.
...in the Pacific this time, operated probably the most varied fleet of submarines ever.
Yeah.
Including...
Their own design, or design built on the Hudson?
All theirs.
Yeah, okay.
The Kaiten crude torpedo.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it sounds like.
Right.
That's a bomb that you sit in and drive into other ships.
Sure, yeah.
The midget submarines, type A, which is the Kōhaiteki, and the Kairyū.
Yeah.
And these were tiny little subs that you could just kind of poop around in, I don't know, see some fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe plant a mine.
It's like recon
ship.
Business, sure.
Medium-range submarines, purpose-built supply submarines.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had submarines that could supply other ships without getting detected.
No, but that's the thing. If you've got a 5,000-mile range... But you'll run out of food 2,500 miles in. If somebody rocks up in a little submarine with a shitload of cans of food,
here's your
job as a
happy
good
meal.
Here's your spam. You know they bombed California.
Who?
The Japanese. There was a Japanese submarine that shot the north coast of destroyed a harbor in the north coast of California.
Mm-hmm.
in the Second World War, and it's the only, other than Pearl Harbor, obviously, it's the...
Technically, that's in the Pacific, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, no, indeed, but it's the only actual landmass in that, in the Pacific War, if you think of it in terms of the war between the Japanese and the Americans. It's the only actual strike the Japanese had.
It's the only actual strike against America.
They blew up,
They
blew up a harbor, other than Pearl Harbor. They blew up a harbor in Los Angeles.
Actual mainland America.
Yeah, in mainland America, yeah. But they blew up.
And there's
up
a guy who was sat there on the can reading the Beano. And he's looked up.
Well, supposedly they knew that Pearl Harbor was going to happen.
What are the odds?
Blah, blah, blah,
all right, yeah, tinfoil hat, dude. So they also had long-range...
conspiracy, that's
long-range
relatively well
fleet subs that were designed to go out with the fleet.
Yeah.
And basically provide, you know, fleet intercept.
Support, yeah.
They also had... This is brilliant. Submarines with the highest submerged speeds of submarines during World War II.
They had the... Sorry, is that the widest range?
The fastest boats...
Oh, the fastest boats.
Yeah, the
okay.
fastest submarines
are
in World War II
diesel,
belong to the Japanese.
Are they still diesel and electric?
Yes, everything's right, diesel okay. electric right. at this point. And they had submarines that could carry multiple aircraft.
So they had aircraft carriers that could also become submarines?
I'm guessing they can launch off the back of the sub.
I feel like they could land on them. They could land on them and refuel.
Yeah, so they,
and
fold,
then take off
they fold up the Zero or whatever it
yeah,
is,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and they load it onto an I-400 class submarine, and then off it goes.
To be fair, if you are... If your planes are with the express purpose of people hammering, filling themselves up with explosives and crashing them into something, you could probably make them out of canvas and say, only need to fly 5 miles, so fuck it.
That wasn't all they did, but anyway.
Is that disparaging?
Little bit.
Didn't mean to be.
No, it wasn't disparaging. It was more that the Japanese Air Force was not just kamikaze. They weren't
sure,
all
no,
like,
course,
oh, look.
Of course.
There's
no need. That is not. That is not. I'm not. I didn't learn all my history from fucking Michael Bay films.
I'm doing stereo. I don't know why it's a mono mic.
I love that you're trying to do a Doppler effect on a stereo mic.
The trouble is, the Japanese were incredibly honourable. They only attacked military targets.
Sure.
As a result, they got annihilated. 2% of the US Navy during World War II was submarines.
Sure.
The US Navy destroyed over 30% of the Japanese Navy.
Oh, wow. Well, you know they're still not allowed Navy now. Until a couple of years ago. I think it was part of the treaties of the end of the Second World War. They weren't allowed to expand their Navy, and they expand their arm or their armed forces, and that included underwater. I'm sure that was, even maybe a year ago, it might have changed.
Yeah. It would make sense. They were fed good navally. Yeah. Just not quite good enough.
We're English Navy, innit?
Well, not really. We didn't engage in the
Pacific. Armada, innit?
We did nothing.
We did nothing. No, I know.
So, this brings us neatly to the Cold War.
Perfect.
The first launch of a cruise missile.
A cruise missile is a homing missile?
It's a missile that carries a nuclear warhead and can independently steer itself to a target.
So a cruise missile is always nuclear?
More or less.
No, I didn't know that. Okay.
I mean,
I'm asking a question.
They can also carry high explosive payloads and what have you. The original design of the cruise missile
was a
Cold War. It's not just targeted, it steers itself.
Sure. Okay.
It knows where it's going.
Right, right. Okay.
And bear in mind, we are talking, we are in July 1953.
Fucking hell.
Well, they kind of built it, so...
Let's do a subject next time that's not about warfare. This is a real bummer.
Mm-hmm. We literally covered an entire movie that is set during the Cold War.
No, but we're really good at making stuff that blows each other
the
up.
The Americans are really good at it. So it was launched from the deck of the USS Tunney.
Okay.
And...
What did it blow up?
Well, nothing, because it was a test. But that was pretty much all she wrote.
Sure.
So, what we then have is, in the 1950s... Diesel electric gave way to nuclear subs.
These are nuclear powered subs, so these have got tiny reactors on board.
They're not tiny, they're about the size of a small
cottage.
But what
I mean is they're tinier than.
They have a nuclear reactor.
They're smaller reactors than fucking Chernobyl or something.
Yes.
But they are.
Not by much.
Smaller reactors which power something effectively forever, whatever the half life of fucking uranium is, which is, I would assume, forever. For our purposes.
I mean, this is the big advantage of nuclear subs, and it kind of is outstripped by all of the other advantages. An electric diesel sub can go as long as there's fuel in the tank.
Yeah, yeah. But a nuclear fission sub goes forever.
Can go as long as there's oxygen and food.
So
they have an unlimited range.
And the Japanese have already invented a sub to come and relieve them with more food and everything else.
Yes.
So the Red October is a nuclear sub.
It is.
Is the Dallas a nuclear
100%.
Sub? 100%. So I think that's something that's... I think there's something that's not often mentioned. Sorry if I'm pausing to roll a fag. I apologize. There's something that's not often mentioned that everybody talks about, like nuclear power stations and that kind of stuff. But actually, the like ubiquity, thank you, of nuclear-powered things running around in the world.
Yep.
If you think how many nuclear subs there are, is massive, actually.
And aircraft carriers.
They're all running
carriers
around, yeah,
and large boats.
They're running around in the seas and all over the world all the time. Everyone focuses on nuclear power stations because of Chernobyl, but actually, in reality...
Being completely honest, I haven't actually made a note of this, but during the Cold War, the Russians lost 4 of them.
Sure. Well, the Dutch have just said they found one that was sunk 80 years ago or 50 years ago or something, and apparently it's putting out 800,000 times... the safe level of radiation, and the Russians are like, no, what do you mean? They've literally just found it.
We have no record of it.
Oh,
wait.
What do you mean? Yeah.
Is it, hang on, give me a second. Is it number 17 submarine?
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Oh, shit. We thought there was filing error.
Yeah, exactly.
You mean
it
sank?
But that is true.
Oh, shit.
No, that is really true. That is, first of all, that is a fantastic Russian accent. I really want to commend you on that. That is fantastic. Victor 9. Is my favorite thing.
Where are your nuclear vessels?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But no. That is the thing that always makes me laugh and also scares me a bit. Is that everyone's scared about Sellafield, but no one's scared about a shitload of subs.
No one's scared
nuclear.
About Sellafield anymore because they rebranded.
No. Well, they rebranded. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
So anyway, come on. We need to move on. In the 1950s, nuclear power partially replaces all of the diesel electric stuff. And equipment, importantly, was also developed to. This is brilliant. The three things that are short on a boat, a sub, are fuel, nuclear, solved.
Air and food.
Air. They developed equipment to extract oxygen from seawater. So it's H2O, right?
Scrubbers, right? Yeah.
No, not scrubbers. Scrubbers already existed. Mm. But literally, you can take seawater in. If you can split it and just get
if
rid
you
of
can
the,
take
hydrogen,
out the hydrogen,
you have 2 oxygen.
Yeah.
It's like Catan for breathing people. Board game nerds.
So
will
that's
get
something
that.
I've never understood with submarines, and I know it's different from space, but how they recycle air in space and in submarines has always puzzled me.
They don't need to.
So in submarines, they just...
They just make more of it.
So in submarines, they take the hydrogen out of water.
Well,
there's shitloads of it. We're literally surrounded by it.
To be honest, they might bottle it for a bit and use some of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, they just make more. Mm. You're surrounded by oxygen, it's a bit tricky to get at. And effectively, by this point, we've got the ability for submarines to stay submerged for weeks/months. 1959 to 1960, the first ballistic missile submarines were put into service by both the United States, who launched the George Washington-class submarine.
So that's like ICBMs, when they shoot missiles up in the air, basically.
Yes.
They can
and,
use them as a first
The Soviet Union launched the Gulf-class.
Oh, nice. Because it was on par with the Americans?
No. To be fair, when we talk about Russian submarines, we often use the NATO designation, not the Russian designation.
Okay.
So most of the terms that you hear, like kilo class, alpha class, that's what we called them.
So
the Russians called them something
like
in Russian.
So like in Hunford October, they call Red October a Typhoon class. But
she
that's
is
actually,
a Typhoon class.
But that's an American designation.
It's a NATO designation.
Okay.
So... How do they work?
How's what work?
Submarine. You know that thing we'd been talking about for the past half an hour?
Okay. I don't really know at this point how much I'm meant to learn on, but it's a pressurized tube that the pressure inside is enough that the water doesn't crumple you inside.
That's good. So
and
that's
you have
the hull.
You have to keep enough oxygen inside to keep everyone alive.
Well, given.
There has to be enough energy to move them along, power of one variety or another, to move
Indeed.
Them around. And then there's no windows. You can't just turn on the lights and see where it's going.
So you
need to use sonar and radar and everything else.
Awesome. So you've just given us a great summary of the next segment.
Perfect.
How do submarines work? Mm. So a submarine is, by nature, as with all boats or ships, they are positively buoyant.
Yep.
Basically, they weigh less than the volume of water they would displace if you stuck them underwater, so they pop back up.
Yeah.
That's how boats work.
Yeah. So you're talking about ballast now. You're talking about taking.
No, I'm just talking about boats.
Okay.
Not bots. Boats. Submarines have ballast tanks.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So you are talking about ballast. You son of a
bitch. I was talking about boats. ballast tanks are brilliant because they can basically hold either water or air or both in varying quantities.
So we need some weight to weigh us down. We'll take on some water. We need some air to make us more buoyant. Then we'll take on some air. Or we'll pump them full of air.
We don't take on air. We pump the water out.
Well, we'll pump them full of...
Potentially we pump air in. Yeah, but it doesn't really matter because the ballast tanks are like vacuumous.
And
in
then
nature,
it depends,
they are still lighter.
It depends
than
on what end you do it in, which means you can go up, first, butt first.
We generally have in a modern submarine, we have two sets of ballast tanks. We have the main ballast, which is literally, are you underwater or not?
Okay, yeah.
And these are big fucking things, right? Because they do most of the work of, are we underwater or not?
So do they have ballast tanks, or is that the secondary hull? Like, is it, does it surround the inner tube with all the people in it, and they fill that up with air for the up and down?
No. Or, although, also, yes. So most modern subs have ballast tanks that are built into the gap between the hull.
Okay. Yeah,
holes. Sure. And we'll talk about double hulling, because it's fucking stunning. We also have something called... So the main ballast tank, the MBT, basically remain flooded for all the time you're under, you're submerged.
Yeah.
We also have things called the depth control tanks, or the trim tanks.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are smaller tanks that are basically, when the submarine goes up and down underwater, they are, if the submarine is static and not moving, and they go up and down underwater, what they're doing is they're filling or removing water from these smaller tanks.
To physically move it in that one plane of up and down.
And the nice thing is that basically the sub is built in such a way that the main ballast tanks are just enough for it to sink.
Yeah.
And the trim tanks are just big enough for it to make every adjustment in its possible range.
So left and right, up and down slightly by degrees and whatever.
Why would you go left and right?
Well, the trim, well, you're going down, but there's a big sticking up rock and you need to go around
it
slightly.
You steer around it. Yeah. And you steer around it using the various control planes and surfaces that exist on a modern sub. Submerged. The water pressure on a submarine's hull can reach 580 PSI.
So 580 atmospheres?
No, 580 PSI.
So
pounds per square inch.
Oh, okay, okay.
Standard atmospheric pressure is 14.6 psi.
Okay, sorry.
So an atmosphere is 14.6.
So the only thing I've heard about when I watch like The Abyss and various James Cameron being in a tiny perspex submarine number, has always been about like we're at 5 atmospheres and that kind of stuff. But that's more for the viewer. To say,
it's just easier to relate to.
It makes it easier to relate to with the viewer.
I mean, to be honest, we can do it. It's 14.6, so 580 divided by 14.6.
Easy, exactly. Yeah, work exactly,
out.
I mean, we've both done it. We've both worked out.
Steel submarines, which are most of them.
Yeah.
The Russians actually spent a bit of time making titanium submarines.
Right. Okay.
They took this really seriously. Titanium submarine can reach a depth where they will basically achieve a water pressure on the hull of 1,500 PSI.
Fucking hell. But presumably so expensive, probably not really, can't build a fleet out of them.
But
you are the USSR, so you've got unlimited
also,
funds.
I'm not going to lie, submarines aren't cheap. No. Let's talk about hulls. How do you do that?
You make a big-ass tube out of, like, steel, and then, like, you hammer it so it's perfectly round and there aren't, like, chinks in for the armour to get in.
Round.
And then, yeah, like, you have to, like, it's going to be a perfect cylinder, right? And then the ends have to be perfectly, like a perfect half sphere and that kind of stuff.
No, the ends have to be perfectly squared off to resist the temptation.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So I thought the ends of submarines were round.
They are.
That's how they look in films.
That's why we call them double hulls.
So it's square and then there's a bit welded on the end?
No. There are two hulls to every submarine. There's the outer skin, or the shell, that is the torpedo shape that you see.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is designed for perfect hydrodynamics.
Aerodynamics. Oh, it's hydrodynamics, yeah, of course.
Inside that is a pressure hull, which is made of much fucking thicker steel.
And presumably a shitload of insulation, otherwise you'd be fucking freezing to death.
Although, to be fair, the nuclear reactor in the back's probably going to keep
probably
you
probably quite hot. Are you cold? Go and stand at the back for 10 minutes, you prick.
No, the outer skin is hydrodynamic. The inner skin, the inner hull, is like crazy, crazy strong. Bear in mind, a 1-inch or 25-millimeter deviation. And these things are, like, 2 decks high.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 3 decks high. They're double-decker bus
they're
high,
like,
if not bigger.
And some of them are, like, fucking, like, aircraft carriers that are underwater. You know, they are buildings. They are, you know.
So, a one-inch deviation from the cylindrical nature of the pressure hull reduces its effective diveability by 30%.
So it has to be perfectly round.
Perfect.
Which great, because you've got a load of geezers in a dry dock trying to hammer it out.
Insanely expensive. No, they can't hammer it out because that involves structural
movements. No, but back in the day, they would have been doing that. They would have been trying to bend the steel around. Back in there, they would have been hammering it around.
So super precise shaping welding.
Yeah. How many people had to die before they worked that out? I know it's a dark note.
Most submarine pressure hulls are actually broken up by bulkheads.
Yeah.
So if you get a breach in one, you can kind of seal
the
bulkhead.
Course. Yeah, sure, of course. It's the same thing with ships. You know, they have the steel bulkhead. We've all seen it in Under Siege.
Seal the doors.
You know, they do the thing. You know, he's Under Siege. Yeah. No.
The Typhoon class.
So the Dallas in
Red October. The Dallas is a Los Angeles class.
Yes, sorry. The Typhoon class didn't officially exist in the U.S. Navy until 1992 or something.
We'll speak more on the Dallas on the Typhoon class.
Yeah.
It actually has two main pressure hulls.
Right.
And three individual pressure hulls internally that wrap the control room, the torpedo room, and the steering gear.
So there's four skins before you get to the big box which everybody's in.
No, this isn't for people. This is for weapons and going places.
Right, okay.
Oh, and driving it.
Right, okay, yeah.
The crew were just, like, up in the nose somewhere. Yeah, They're one pressure hull away from oblivion.
So my granddad was in the Navy and he served on a submarine.
In the 50s. Served on an aircraft carrier?
He did. Both. And he did both. And he said that when he worked in, always worked in engine rooms, and he said the thing that scared him the most about the engine room is that it leaked all the time. There was just water. It was just lots of steel riveted together with big beams, you know, big circular beams, big circles of steel.
They got braces, to try and
exactly,
keep
to brace it so they could
do
go
the
underwater.
Precision
exactly,
engineering.
Exactly. They couldn't brace all the way along. And he said the thing that scared him the most was he had to go to sleep. And he put his head down, and his head was by the wall, and there was water just leaking in all the time. And they were constantly pumping it back out again.
And that's a fairly standard naval thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're floating on top of the sea, that's kind of okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. At least I can jump out the top if it's going down. This one, you're like, wait, where are we?
So, nuclear power is now used for all large submarines. There are still, medium to small submarines use diesel-electric.
They're all nuclear-powered?
No, they use diesel-electric in the smaller ones because, frankly, a nuclear reactor is expensive to make, to maintain.
Too big.
And too big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And too heavy.
Yeah, it'd have to be twice the length and the back half would just have a nuclear reactor in it.
How does a sub see where it's going?
Well, sonar. You can't have windows. So I guess sonar and a lot of really, really, really well-charted maps.
Really,
and a stopwatch, if anything is to go by, for the Red October.
It's basically, a submarine navigates. I mean, modern day a submarine will navigate using a combination of the ability to surface and get a GPS fix.
Sure.
But fundamentally, when it's down there, it's pretty much dead reckoning that's helped along by some very smart
computers.
That's
very different to now, where it's like GPS, sonar is so much better. Like, you can scape the landscape of the seabed and that kind of stuff using sonar. But back in there, as we were saying, like in Hunt for Red October, this is the best map we've got. We know how long this channel is, so we know we can do this speed at this length.
Very specific manoeuvring. I mean, most of the time, the sea is quite big, and it's a case of, we are floating here, we need to get there, let's go that far at this speed for this long.
But I guess you also need to know things like, if you're going near land, you need to know like tide times and that kind of stuff. You don't want to beach your fucking submarine. You look like a right dick.
I don't think tide ever has any impact on a submarine.
We're on a sandbank in the English Channel. We look like a right bunch of wankers.
They were designed to get close. They were not designed to get that close. You know, your submarine-based ICBM is probably capable of a range of about 50 miles.
Given the range of an ICBM, then yeah, of course. Yeah,
if not more.
Yeah.
So they can quite happily pop up in safe deep water.
Yeah, yeah.
Pop, pop, pop.
But that's how, like I said, about the Japanese submarine popping up in Los Angeles and blowing up the harbour.
Yeah.
They didn't have the capability to detect it, and thank God the Japanese didn't have the ability to...
I'm assuming they did that with a deck gun as well, which is quite
impressive. Torpedoes.
They torpedoed.
They torpedoed a harbour in like Santa Ana, Los Angeles. It's like... Los Angeles, like legit Los Angeles, amazing.
So you basically have, a modern sub is really complicated, so we've got a shit ton of sensors and GPS and radio and all the rest of it. But your basic sensors on a submarine consist of active sonar and passive sonar.
Okay. So active sonar is sending out a ping.
It is.
And passive is realizing that you've been pinged?
Passive is just listening.
Okay.
And this
For
is
a second,
what
I thought I could heard singing.
This is what they do in Red October. Bear in mind, most submarines, most military submarines, are covered in hydrophones.
Okay, yeah.
So they can basically hear reverberating through the hull. And of course, water is an amazing conductor of sound.
But you're also in an enormous metal tube. So as long as you plug a hydrophone or a microphone into... Water is such a great conductor of sound that this essentially becomes an amplifier of any variety. Like, you can hear that.
And yet... The internal noise of a submarine is such, even when it's running silent, that to get decent sonar reads on what's going on around you, you have to tow an array.
Okay.
So this is basically a long cable, and on the end of it are a shit ton of microphones, hydrophones.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And these are towed probably several hundred feet behind the sub. That's like 30, 40
meters. It has to be far
meters.
Enough away from the sound of your own sub to see
It has
see
to be far
the...
enough away from the sound of the screws.
Yeah, yeah.
And fundamentally, it also then has to be dampened against any reverberation that might go along the cable.
Yeah.
And that is fundamentally how submarines work out what's going on around them. There's a whole bunch
Don't
of
Don't you think
stuff.
That's terrifying?
Why?
Because that's the thing. This sounds stupid, and this is a very me analogy. But my thing I always think about with Star Trek, right, is that... Open the viewing bridge. Open the show it on the viewing screen.
You can always see where they're going.
But in reality, if you want to see far ahead in space, you'd be the same as a submarine, right? And Star Trek have got this magical magnifying, wonderful screen, but you don't have that. And that's something that struck me with Red October massively, which is you're flying blind the whole time, and it's like, oh, we need to have warfare at sea. Let's fire torpedoes. Well, I can't see the fucking thing. It's basically, I'm basing it on sound. I'm literally, only just basing it on sound.
Sound and geometry.
Sound and geometry, and having a good stab.
No,
so I suppose...
It's sound and geometry.
Torpedoes.
And also the fact that torpedoes home.
But torpedoes are going to home into a signature of, noise or heat or something like that. Then that massively improves it, but...
Well, not really heat underwater. Not such a thing. But no, fundamentally, they home in on noise. Magnetic.
Is that how they trick the torpedo when they switch it between three submarines in
So a standard torpedo, a modern torpedo firing system works on the following basis. You have a thing called a safety, which is a distance that it has to travel before it
so
actually...
So he runs it into it so before it gets a chance to arm. Sure.
Because that basically gets it far enough away from you that it's magnetic detection and it's acoustic detection.
But then they have the torpedo that homes onto the October and then the Dallas sweeps in and then they transfer it to Topalov's boat, but that's all based on sound.
It's based on, honestly, it's sound and magnetics.
And
radar. Because, to be honest, the torpedo doesn't... Right, so submarine captains will never ping. And this is what always used to bug me in the movies. When the early movies, when you'd be like, you'd be on the torpedo, and you'd be like... Oh, no, the torpedo's just there
one
going...
One ping!
No, the torpedo's just... the submarine's just going... Ping! Ping!
You give away your position.
Totally. No submarine captain ever pings, ever. If you can avoid it.
Do you know, there's an amazing... philosophy book called About Behaviorism by a guy called Bertram Skinner, B.K. Skinner, I think his name is, and he was employed by the American government and the American government for the naval services, where he invented a torpedo and a missile where in the head of the torpedo you had a bird. And you... listen to me. This is insane, but this is true. They trained the bird that every time there was a picture of that class of plane or submarine, they'd always put the food on it, so the bird would always peck at it, always put his face at it, right?
So what they were doing behavioral conditioning.
Pavlov's so what
torpedo.
They were doing with torpedoes and with missiles, they were investigating, doing a thing where the bird could see in the perspex screen the torpedo, and it would peck towards the torpedo. Because that's where the food thought it was, and that would guide the torpedo and the missile. That's an honest-to-God thing from the 50s.
I get it with the missiles, but you can't see underwater.
Well, you can't see underwater, indeed. No, indeed. This is why this is not a thing. But that was his treatise. After his philosophy book about behaviorism was... We get them to peck until we get them.
Fuck me. That's nearly as bad as putting a bomb on a stick.
They've tried a lot of things, the American. I just remember that we're doing a podcast and I'm not just telling stupid stories. I'm really sorry.
It's kind of what we're here for. It's definitely what you're here for. Am I right, listener?
No, sorry.
Am I right?
Great book, though. Highly recommend.
Yeah. The Amazon affiliate link is at... No.
If you use forward slash, we're drunk with anything, you get 15%.
We've got active sonar, passive sonar. It's all passive. Torpedoes are purely active. They're pinging away like crazy.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And they're also magnetically guided. They're also heat guided. Pretty much any sensor they can have. Yeah, but fundamentally, when you launch a torpedo, it's safe for a bit to get it far enough away to avoid a...
Accidental blowing you up because it's on the end of a stick.
And then it arms, and then it will acquire, i.e. it finds the thing it's been fired roughly at. And it is roughly. It's basically...
Well, these things are so big, you don't look for a specific part of, like, blow the bridge up or something. You just fucking hit this thing with a fucking torpedo. It doesn't matter.
Target their propulsion systems.
Yeah.
I can shoot at it.
Hit their deflector shields.
I might hit it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So there is a whole ton of stuff that we could talk about with like commercial submarines and research subs, and they're all fun and cute. But to be honest,
a variation on a theme. To be fair,
submarines were fundamentally a military endeavor.
Yeah.
There have been some amazing civilian efforts in terms of research.
Sure.
In terms of, ironically, deep sea rescue.
Ironically invented by James Cameron sometimes.
He might come up in a minute.
Ah.
I want to talk to you about the amazing fact.
Yes. Good, because this has been mind-blowing already, so this might better be fucking good, Rob. And I'll be honest, even if we have to do a retake.
The USSR.
Back in the USSR.
Back in the USSR. Made something called the Typhoon-class submarine, which was the largest submarine that had ever been made.
Right. It's like an aircraft carrier underground, to quote. Underwater, to quote.
It displaced between 33,000 and 48,000 tons.
What? Okay, that's not the amazing fact, though, presumably.
No, these things are ridiculously big.
That is insane.
It could carry a crew of 160.
Right.
Most of the room was given over to missiles.
So that's most people's offices, probably times two, underwater.
It was 175 metres long.
Right. I would not like to run that far. That is mental. 175 metres long.
Yeah, that's almost like double the distance Usain Bolt can do in 10 seconds.
But that is the length of...
It would take him nearly 20 seconds to run along the submarine. Presuming he doesn't have to get out of the way. They made six.
Right. They made six.
They made six Typhoon-class submarines.
Are they still in operation?
Oh, God, no. They're glowing in the dark in a shipyard somewhere.
Yeah, well, no, indeed.
They've all very decommissioned.
All of the crew have died of radiation poisoning. But that is insane. 175
meters. They were actually
meters.
Remarkably safe. Right. But they are now still remarkably radioactive, so a bit of a problem.
And how many crew?
160.
That is insane.
By contrast, the USA Los Angeles class submarine.
So the Dallas in...
indeed. Yeah. They built 62 of them.
Right. Wow.
They're only a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
They're 110 metres long.
Sure. That's quite a lot. That's a third shorter.
But even so,
if
you want to... I mean, people talk about the space race. They talk about Chernobyl as being the reason that the USSR went bust. Fundamentally, I think it went bust because they didn't have enough money. Because each Los Angeles-class submarine, they made 62.
Yeah.
Costs, means adjusted, in today's dollars...
Right.
$1.56 billion.
So they spent $75 odd billion.
$1.56 billion per sub.
So
oh, we'll have 60.
Billion. So 75 billion just on the ship, not on the food, the air, the personnel, the everything else. That
just
is
on
the
boat.
Well, you know, naval personnel have, they feed naval personnel in America for $4 a day. Which would be why, because they spent all the money on fucking submarines. That is insane.
So that's our amazing...
$75 billion on 62 submarines. What are they even fucking using them for?
stopping the Russians.
Going to China and being like, look how many submarines we've got.
No. Oh, no, they're all decommissioned as well.
It's $75 million on a dick measuring contest.
The Los Angeles class is no longer in service.
So they spent $75 million on...
Billion.
That's the amazing fact.
Billion.
They spent $75 billion on submarines that don't even sail around
anymore.
What the fuck did they do with them? Chop them all up and make them into ships?
Cat food cans.
That is insane. So this leads me to a question I have to ask you, which might be preempting something. Why didn't, like, Dan Bilzerian or one of these dickheads buy one of them and turn it into a luxury Captain Nemo wonderful wonderland of sailing under the world?
Because they're horrifically classified and also horrifically powered by a nuclear reactor.
Oh, right, yeah. And also a nuclear reactor which is 50 years old, so probably not the best place to be around. Yeah, fair. Yeah, okay.
I'd probably give it... I mean, the reactor itself would probably quite happily go on reacting for a while. But yeah, it's
more the shielding that I was worried about, Rob.
The shielding is probably solid.
The uranium is awesome, but maybe don't live there?
I'm thinking more it's a case of, you know, so we're hiring for the newest cruise ship. Oh, by the way, it's a bit different.
How's your
physics?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
I play the piano, and I also have a pet monkey.
But don't you think it's amazing? The thing that amazes me, when you were saying earlier about the not being able to see where you're going thing, right? You take... Okay. This is going to sound disparaging, and I don't mean it to be, but it's still going to sound disparaging. You take in new recruits, right, who know nothing of nothing. These aren't doctorate-level physicists or anything else, Your average Joe. Your average seaman. And they train these people. Okay, no, we're moving on from that one. I think we've done quite well to not make a semen joke, Rob. Let's not start now.
Right. I think we just did. But...
We have to acknowledge it, at least. But we take these people in, the Royal Navy, the American Navy, the Russian Navy, whatever. They take these people in, and they train them in this insanely... Like, one of the most difficult things in the entire universe, which is based around inertia and... propulsion and all of those things. Essentially, you're making these people astronauts, except they're just like a bloke in a uniform that goes 12 degrees. That is baffling.
Well, that's...
I'm fucking terrified.
That's the submarine corps.
Fuck that,
this
man.
Is why... I mean, don't get me wrong.
I'm going to bank, Rob.
I could be speaking out of turn, and I genuinely don't know what I'm talking about. I'm almost certain that submariners are respected...
In the Navy,
above all else,
that
in their respective navies.
That is something that without
mostly
without being,
because
without being anecdotal and sentimental, that is something that my granddad said. He served for 6 months on a submarine. When he came out of serving on a submarine, he'd go and serve. So he served on Liverpool, which is his ship of Belfast. He got there and his reputation preceded him. You were on a submarine?
When
holy
you got
shit.
The badge and all the rest of it.
And he worked in the engine room.
That was,
you know,
Yoldy worldy
submarine. Yeah, yeah, that was 50s.
To these
that's
the
50s.
That will stay under for 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, that's insane.
Cold War subs were down for half a year.
I mean, how do you not go insane?
Well, if you watch Das Boot,
cabin fever and stuff like that. Like,
I'm guessing a lot of psychology screening.
But there must have to be psychological screening before they let you go down on a boat for 8 months, right? Well, you'd hope so.
So, we've got a nice light moment.
Thank fuck, because I was just getting really dark and deep. Sorry about that. Yeah.
We are going to play a quiz. We have a quiz. We do quizzes now.
We do quizzes now. This is our thing now.
A listener may have worked out that... listener, by the way, singular.
Listener.
We've only got one left. Hey, Greg, how you doing? Love
thanks,
you.
Thanks for sticking with us, Greg. It's pretty nice.
No, our listeners...
See you on Friday for pizza.
Damn it, now they know where we'll be.
He'll love that. He'll love that.
Our listeners may have realised that the quiz thing has become a bit of a tit-for-tat job.
Has it? Are we trying to outdo each other? Well, I feel bad
50%
because...
50%, Mike.
My last one was... I think the Sean Connery one was the best one. Are you going to do an impression?
No.
Well, then I'm
going. I'm going to impersonate a submarine.
Well, exactly.
Blah, 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 blah.
Boop.
That's motivating, sorry.
Boop.
And this quiz is called Sub, Pub or Snub?
Sub, Pub or Snub?
Sub, Pub or Snub.
Right.
I'm going to read you a name, and you have to tell me, is it A, a submarine?
Right.
B, a pub in the British Isles?
Right.
Or C, none of the above? Or possibly both.
Shit, your quiz is so much better than mine is. God damn it. Okay, fine. Fine.
So, are you clear on the rules? You have to pick
one
of three things.
It
is either a submarine, a public house.
As long as I don't have to tell you where the pub is, that's fine. Okay,
no.
Okay, it's fine.
And what's on guest draft pump number three?
Leonie Solo-Grosi. Oh, this is Somerset.
Just to be clear, these quotes aren't from movies.
What? Right.
So, going to start with...
Right.
Olympus.
That's a sub.
It is.
Yeah.
It's an Oberon class, which means it's British.
Sure. Of course, I knew that.
It's a diesel-electric hunter-killer sub designed to hunt other submarines.
Okay.
The Nova Scotia.
That's an aircraft carrier, not a sub.
I'll give it to you. It's not an aircraft carrier. It is, however, both a pub in Bristol and a troop ship or prisoner of war ship that was sunk by a submarine during World War II.
Oh, so I had a 2 in 3 chance and still managed to get it wrong, but still right.
Right, number three.
Number three.
The Halibut. Halibut.
None. It's a snub. It's not.
It was the first and only American nuclear-powered submarine designed and built as a guided missile.
Sorry, the USS Halibut.
The USS Halibut.
Fucking nerds. God damn it. This is what
I'm talking about. That badge isn't looking so good right now,
is
it?
This is the thing of like nerds naming stuff.
We're moving on. The Falcon.
I'm going to say a pub.
It is a pub. Yeah. It's in Chester. The building originated as a house in about 1200 and was later extended to the south along Lower Bridge Street with a great hall parallel to the street.
Can I just quickly concede?
What?
This is the best quiz you've ever done. This is definitely the best one.
Okay.
I did a shitty Sean Connery one last time. I mean, sure, I had an Elf Hitler.
We're halfway through.
Right.
The limiting factor.
The limiting factor. Well, that's too limiting. Long for a ship name. I'm going to say that's a pub.
No, it's a submarine. It's a DSV limiting factor.
DSV?
Civilian deep sea vehicle. Sub.
No. I remember DSV.
It visited the Challenger Deep.
DSV, which, by the way, stars Scott Glenn.
Right. It visited the deepest point in the ocean. It's found.
So is that a James Cameron number or something?
And the area it visited was also visited by James Cameron in his submarine.
Is that a small use submersible submarine, or is that an honest to god like big warship?
No, this is a tiny little and go, oh my god, look! But the main thing is they found single use plastics at the bottom of the Challenger Deep.
Yeah.
So we need to stop using straws, people.
I know you're laughing, but you're not wrong. We do need to stop doing that. I recently switched to bars of soap instead of shower gel.
How do you drink out of a can with a bar of soap?
I use glass. I drink out of glass. Yeah. And also cans are made of metal.
But you still put a straw in it.
You drink cans of beer through a straw?
Yeah. It's the only way to roll. Okay. The Los Angeles...
Okay, so they can't be a Los Angeles, there's a Los Angeles class, or could it be the original Los Angeles class submarine for which all else are named? The Los Angeles is a pub.
It may be, but in this instance, it is actually the lead submarine in the Los Angeles class.
So it's the first
series of submarines.
Shit, I shouldn't have doubted myself.
It was active for 34 years and 3 months.
Okay.
So it literally got decommissioned yesterday, I think. Okay.
I bet people love getting served.
The Mauritania.
The Mauritania. Sounds like a very British-ish thing. I'm serving on board the Mauritania, don't you know? But also it sounds like, don't you want to pint down the Mauritania? But also I keep saying pub, so I'm going to say nothing. It's snub.
No, it's a pub. It's in Bristol.
For fuck's sake.
It does, however, include some of the furnishings from RMS Mauritania.
Okay.
Is it Merchant Navy?
How are you well this well?
Right.
You did this today. How did you work out this quiz so well?
The Scepter.
Okay, so Scepter is not a ship. Could well be a pub. I'm going to say pub. I keep saying pub, but I think it's going to be a pub.
No, it's the Swiftsure class, which was a nuclear-powered hunter-killer.
Motherfucker.
In the British Navy.
Oh, because it's a Scepter, sure, of course. I think I'm like 2 out of 6 at this point.
The Moon Underwater.
That is the Moon Underwater is the name of the Witherspoons in Watford.
It's also the name of the Witherspoons in Manchester, which is apparently the largest in the country.
The Moon Underwater in Watford was renamed the Rat and Parrot.
Probably because Manchester complained.
Yeah.
Also,
the Moon Underwater. The Moon Underwater.
How do you put those two things together?
The Moon Underwater was the only place that served us until I was 18.
And your last one, the Hyman G. Rickover.
Okay. First of all, you know I'd love a Hyman. The Hyman G. Rickover. There's nothing. That's a snub.
Nope.
God damn it.
Technically, you're right. Because right now it's right. Nothing. It will be a brand new, shiny Virginia-class submarine when they finish building it.
Virginia-class is big.
It's big. It's very new. And they haven't built it yet, so you can have
Is it the first Virginia-class?
No, it's the second.
So that's it's part of the new...
The new range.
The new range, yeah.
The new...
I new three out of eight there.
I'll give you three.
No, I think
less than 50%.
That's fine. No, that's fine. Less than 50, that's fine. It doesn't matter if I get 50%, Rob. It only matters if you get 50%, my friend.
I have to get 50%. Apparently, it's the law. So, anyway, we've now one-upped to the point that the next quiz that Mike sets me will involve telepathy.
No, I just need to make it more research and not, like, toss it off in 12 minutes at work, probably.
You lasted 12 minutes? No, anyway.
Twice. On my own? Who am I waiting for?
2 minutes, rest.
Yeah.
2 minutes. Yeah,
that
makes sense.
Includes getting dressed and undressed and undressed and undressed and redressed. Right, lighting a candle.
I mean, you can't wank clothes at work.
Lighting a candle. Going to get myself a glass of
putting on the tunes.
A glass of brandy, exactly. Putting on Al Green. You know, turn off the light. Light a candle of cum. Let's do it again. Is that
so
too
anyway,
much?
I was going to talk about submarines in popular culture, but we kind of did that last episode.
We might have covered that. I might have talked around that.
That's pretty much it.
That was legit interesting.
It's not even close to being all of submarines.
I fear that I'm picking topics
that are this broad.
I fear that I've ruined the episode by being too interested, so hopefully everyone's enjoyed it.
Well, we'll see. If everybody's willing to spend 3 hours listening to us talk about submarines.
God. It wasn't 3 hours, was it?
Oh, yeah, it's Thursday
well, it could have
right
been.
Now.
It could have been.
They tried to kick us out hours ago. Told them to fuck off.
No, but seriously, thank you. That was really, really, really interesting.
Oh,
so
don't thank me on the podcast.
Well, cut it out then. You're editing.
All right.
This has been the deep dive episode of We're Drunk and We Know Things. This month, or this week, we have been talking about submarines. It has been bloody fascinating. We have been drinking Stouffer's Press, no less, because it's bloody hot, so you've got to drink a cold drink outside the Prince of Wales in the sun for a change.
It's my local tipple, that.
It is our local tipple.
Not here, where I used to be from, where you talk a bit like that. No, that's Somerset shit.
I say you're not from there.
No, I'm from further up. The other place I make cider.
You want to spend some time working out what your accent's meant to sound like?
Yeah,
he speaks like this because he was taught to speak by the BBC, and that is fine. And enunciating, I would like to say thank you so much for joining us. And next week, next month, we will talk about some more interesting shit. Thank you.
Ariel, listen to me. The human world, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there.
That shout-out is to go on the front of the episode that goes out on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, shit. I've got to edit an episode tomorrow. Episode tomorrow.
Yeah, I know.
All right, sweetheart. Call your jets, homie.
Damn. Mr. Producer gets grumpy after dark.
Have you seen that? You should. It's good.
It's superb. I mean, modelled.
Give us a kiss.
To a tea.
Sorry, I was getting daggers from the producer, so, you know. It's your episode, mate. Don't look at me.
Is it with me?
Yeah, it's you, yeah.
I'm not sure how this goes anymore.
You remember, you got to talk about submarines.
Right.
You could literally make
Since
all this
the dawn of time.
Ooh.
Good looper.
Is that enough for the bloopers, I was going to say?